Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? It's the Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. There is a lot going on in the world of sports, and something's going on in the rest of the world, which maybe I need some help with, but we'll get to that. Eldrick Tiger Woods on the prowl. We'll get to the Masters, a tradition unlike any other. Upcoming. Man, we got a lot to get to. Mick Cronin, who is the new head ball coach in Westwood, the hills of Westwood at UCLA. Mick will join us upcoming in 15 minutes. He has more wins than anybody else in college basketball under 50 years old. Like, who knew? Who knew? Anyway, Mick Cronin will join us. Hunter Mahan's going to join us. New Vanderbilt head coach Jerry Stackhouse. Stack is going to join us. And Evan Fournier is going to join us. He's, of course, a guard for the Orlando Magic, one of the surprise teams in the NBA. Speaking of surprise teams in the NBA, the Sacramento Kings, bit of a surprise team. Didn't make the playoffs, but best season record-wise in 13 years. So to celebrate, they fired their head coach today, Jabe Jaeger, because it's the NBA, right? Man, is there a lot going on. The Nipsey Hussle Memorial is going on at Staples Center, and it's a better crowd than maybe any Lakers game this year. This is like Michael Jackson type of stuff, like Michael Jackson's memorial that was there. So keep an eye on golf, more NBA stories, some Major League Baseball to talk about, incredible guests. But I do want to talk about something going on in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is trying to figure out how to get their culture right in 2019. Things that you didn't have to do in 1995, you have to do now. In 1995, you didn't have to tell your team, hey man, stay off of social media, don't post live videos from the locker room. 1995, you didn't have to stop guys from tweeting back and forth with fans because they might throw a teammate or ex-teammate under the bus. In 1995, if you wanted to talk to somebody, you had to either pick up the phone and talk to them, call them, or actually, here's a breaking one, go over to their house or see them at the facility and have a conversation with them. But this isn't 1995. This is 2019. And credit Ramon Foster, a veteran guard who called a PSA on social media urging ex-dealers to stop criticizing current players. Quote, moving forward, any former player or affiliate of the Steelers who has an issue with anyone still in the locker room, please contact me or Mike Pouncey or anyone else you feel you can talk to. He went on. Whoever you have an issue with, we'll get you their number. You can address it with them, I promise. The media might give y'all good traffic on your social media outlets, but the guy still in that locker room, who y'all still know personally, have to answer for those comments. Call them what you want, but call them personally and tell them. Defend who you want to defend, but you don't have to mention them at all. Whoever you have, whether you have a ring or played for 1 year, enough, chill. Most players at one point in their life want to take their kids back to the place where they once play. Don't burn too many bridges. It's a long history of brotherhood more than anything. Business is one thing, but let's keep it at a minimum for guys who have to answer to these comments moving forward. The latest firestorm came from former Steelers running back Rashard Mendenhall, who labeled Ben Roethlisberger as a racist in a tweet before clarifying hours later that he was trying to make an exaggerated point. Oops. All right, listen, let me add to the PSA. Don't call somebody a racist unless you're really, really, really sure that they're a racist. Because I can only tell you this. it's, as a white male, it's really hard to shed a label of being a racist, especially even when you're not. It's just, what do you say? Like, I've been around black people my whole life. I don't have a racial bone in my body. But then people think, well, you're just acting. You're just playing. You're just trying to, you're doing the Costanza, I have a black friend thing. Like, no, really. If I don't like you, it's not because you're black. It's because I just don't like you. So I would add that you got to be very careful about ever calling somebody. You got to be sensitive to it. But I love this from Ramon Foster. This, frankly, is what should take place with every NBA, with every NFL team, with every Major League Baseball team. It just takes leadership. And that's why it's right to criticize LeBron James. Look, LeBron James is a true story. He didn't go to the exit meetings yesterday in LA. Now, in fairness to LeBron James, he wasn't scheduled to do an exit meeting yesterday in LA. In Los Angeles, LeBron James was supposed to be at the last game of the season. He was there. Magic Johnson was also there. LeBron was supposed to have his exit meeting after the game, so that he could then fly out and see his best friend play his last game of his career. That was scheduled. But because Magic Johnson chose to not tell anybody that he was going to resign and then do so before the game, now LeBron was left with I was supposed to go see Dwayne Wade. Now, LeBron had every right to go see his best friend play his last game. They are essentially brothers. They are the best of friends. They endured four successful and partially tumultuous years together in Miami, and their friendship will last far longer than LeBron's time with LA with the Lakers. On the other hand, when the house is burning down, you don't do what George Costanza did and run over women and children on the way out the door, even if you're supposed to run, supposed to get out the door. Like, I know you're important. But the fact is, it was complete chaos in Los Angeles yesterday. So all you got to do if you're LeBron James is go like, hey, listen, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go do my exit meetings at 9 a.m. I'm going to show up. I'll do 15 minutes of Q&A. Then I'm going to go over to the private airport at LAX. I'm going to fly out. That's at noon Eastern time. It takes 4.5 hours airtime to get there. I'll land somewhere 5-6 o'clock. I may miss some of the pregame stuff, but I'll get there at game time and I'll be there for when Dwayne Wade plays his last game. Meanwhile, you take the social media and you put a PSA out there. Hey, don't anybody talk about what's going on with the Lakers, past, present, whatever. We're a family. We're going to figure it out. This is Ramon Foster saying, let's get our house in order. Like, the bad thing about these cell phones is the good thing about these cell phones. You can, in fact, communicate with anybody anywhere in the world, and any comment you make on social media can and will be picked up anywhere. But you don't have to. You can actually use it for good, not for evil. And the Steelers are sit there and going like, hey, man, we got to stop the back and forth. This is basically what Kevin Durant should know. Remember Kevin Durant in his show, The Boardroom? He came out and said, hey, the reason I had burner accounts was I wanted to be like a regular guy. I wanted to have conversations with my friends, you know, on social media. Like, dude, haven't you ever heard of text? You can actually send those tweets to your friends and text them and talk about them on a group chat without it being broadcast to the entire world. Or you can do what Kevin Durant did, which ultimately is, in fact, traceable. So I think what Foster's done is great leadership. I think it's missing in the world of sports. I think it's missing in the business world. Just because you can tell people what's going on in your life doesn't mean you should. We have friends where we live, and what generally happens is when I meet families, they start following you, you start following them on Instagram. And I have a, there's a family that we're pretty close to with. One of my kids is really close with one of their kids. They slept over my house, and I know they're going through a kind of a little bit of an ugly divorce. What divorce isn't ugly on some level, right? Especially when your kid's involved. And every once in a while, one of the two sides, especially one side, will IG out something about the other person. And it's mean, and it's nasty, and it's hurtful, and I'm sure that person is hurt by the other. But you know what you don't have to do? You don't have to tell the rest of the world. Because not only does the kid know, but then the kid's friends know, the kid's friend's parents know, and it puts all of us in a super uncomfortable position, and we shouldn't know what's going on in your household, in your bedroom, or in their bedroom. We just shouldn't. These are not things that need to be broadcast to the entire world. Ramon Foster's acting like a grown-up. Hey, man, you got a problem with him? Cool. Text me. I'll get you their number. You guys hug it out. You don't have to like the other person. You don't have to want to engage with the other person. You don't even have to confront the other person. But you can't do is you can't take the social media and let other people in on your family's problems. Because as he said, like, look, at some point, you're going to want to come back here. You're going to want to come back and say, I'm a former Pittsburgh Steeler. And you don't want to walk into a locker room where everybody looks at you and says, like, you're not welcome here. You're allowed to have beefs. You're allowed to have gripes. There, you're allowed to be bitter. What you're not supposed to do is let the rest of the world in on your family business. Finally, a grown-up in the locker room of children in Pittsburgh.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
UCLA, it took 99 days, but they finally found their head coach, and he's one of just six coaches in the country that have led his team to the past nine NCAA tournaments, and he has the most wins of any coach in Division I college basketball under 50 years old. He's Mick Cronin. He's the new head coach of the UCLA Bruins. He joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Number of hours you have slept since you got the job?
Four.
Now,
what's up, buddy?
How are you?
You know, I feel like I'm 25 again. It's amazing what the adrenaline burst will do for you, my friend.
Okay, so your name was mentioned very early on, and then other names were mentioned. What's that process like? Because look, you can't prepare for a job that you haven't been offered. You still had a great job in your hometown at your alma mater. Like, what was that? It was kind of like, it seemed like 2 weeks before, between someone mentioning your name and it getting publicized and when you actually got the job. What was that time like?
Well, as you know, I'm a father, so I had a lot going on because I'm a package deal with my daughter. Obviously, her mother and I are good friends. And so my ex-wife is coming to Southern California as well. So I had a lot of things to button up to make this happen. But you know, it seemed like time was flying by. You know, you're trying to decompress from your season. First of all, Doug, I mean, you know, we put so much into this with the emotion of a season. You're sailing along, and you know, you win your conference tournament, you're cutting down nets 1 week, and then you got kids crying in your locker room the next week, and you're trying to process all that. And then, you know, and nowadays everybody's trying to recruit half your roster the way college basketball goes. You know, any kid that's not starting for you, people are trying to get them to transfer. So you got so many things going on at the same time that I just said to myself, hey, look, you know, I'm just going to keep communicating with these guys. They were honest with me, Doug, at all times. So I was told from day one that this wasn't going to happen until after the Final Four. And they never wavered from that. And there wasn't ever a period where I wasn't hearing from Dan Guerrero and Josh Rebholz or my representative. So it was it wasn't crazy for me, and I know how it looked probably to everybody on the outside, because as you know, I got a lot of friends in Los Angeles, and so they're rooting for me, and they're living and dying on every report, and they're calling me saying, "Why's this guy writing this?" And I'm like, "Stop reading that stuff." And so, you know how it is in these things. They take on a life of their own, man. But fortunately for me, I'm here, and I'm ready to get rolling.
What's it mean to be look, you're the son of a legendary coach, and you know and love college basketball like anyone who's at the top of this business. To get the call that they want you to be the head coach at UCLA. Like, look, Cincinnati is a great program with great, great history of its own. But UCLA is it's a different level of just a different level in terms of how it's viewed nationally, even internationally. What's it like to be the son of a coach who was doing great and get that call that you're going to be the next head coach at UCLA?
Yeah, I didn't know until it happened. You know, and look, as you know, I worked really hard to build Cincinnati back into national prominence and 9 straight tournaments and graduating every player and have a program that people could be proud of there with integrity and great kids in the program. So I was good where I was at and things were rolling. So I didn't know until it really happened, I didn't know in my heart what I was going to feel. But when it happened, I knew that I didn't want to leave my players. You know, you've seen me coach, and the people that have seen me coach. You can't coach the way I coach if you don't have real relationships with your players. So that was excruciating, but that was the only thing that would have helped. You know, was holding me back. You know, everything else in my mind was, I didn't even want to negotiate. I just wanted to say yes. So when it happened, that's when I knew. Like I said, you know, telling the players was brutal, and so many friends and for me, family, obviously in Cincinnati. But this is the opportunity of a lifetime, and I get all that goes with it. I like you said, we're college basketball savants. You and I both grew up on the game with our fathers, so it's not like I'm blind to what I'm getting into. But the challenge for me is exciting. And it's something I've tried to prepare for this day to get this job. And, you know, there's other blue blood jobs, but they're not in Westwood.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, the job is the job, but also the opportunities of life in Los Angeles for my daughter. I checked all boxes. And very few that I would have left Cincinnati for. And it would have had to have been just as good for my daughter as well. So I knew it, though, when the call got made. I knew it was all excitement.
Who's the first person you called or texted?
That was the problem, Doug. I couldn't tell anybody.
But you could tell family, or you could tell, you know, like who's, like, literally, honest to God, who was the first person?
No, I that was the problem. I got the call and I couldn't tell anybody. I'm sitting there jumping out of my skin, and you know, and it's like, oh my gosh, this is real. And look, your heart is like, I got to leave my players. And that I can't emphasize how hard that was. But then, you know, hey, you just got named the head coach at UCLA. I mean, you know, it's real. And my friends out here, I couldn't even tell them. I mean, it was because you got to remember, I had to tell my players first.
Right.
I did not want my players at Cincinnati reading on, you know, this day and age on Twitter, and that I was leaving. So that's why. So, I mean, now I'll tell you, the first person I told is my ex-wife, because obviously, you know, we're a package deal, and it's, you know, there's a lot to that. It's, you know, shows you what type of relationship we have, because she's going to move as well. So, you know, she was we're friends, and she's known me a long, long time. So she actually went to Washington State and ran hurdles, so she's a Pac-12 girl. So she was excited for me. You know, we got a great relationship. But yeah, that's the one I could tell, was her. And then obviously on Tuesday morning, we woke my daughter up, told her she wasn't going to school, and we sat her at the kitchen table and told her what was going to happen. And then I drove to my dad's house, told him, and then I drove to back to campus and told our team.
What did your dad say?
Well, he was told, you got to understand, he doesn't miss practice.
I know.
You know, his whole life is, you know, so.
I know. That's why I asked. You talk about package deal. Like, you're kind of a package deal with your dad. By the way, people don't know his dad, Hep, legendary, longtime high school basketball coach in LaSalle. So I'm just wondering, what was torn at first.
At first, it was, you know, I would say a little heartbroken at first. And I said, look, I got to go tell the team. I'm going to let you process this. And Dan Guerrero and Josh Repholz were great. I called them. I said, guys, I need a favor. I need you to call my dad. And they did it. From there, he's been beyond excited. He doesn't like to wear socks, Doug. So he's good. He's out here. He's telling everybody yesterday at the press conference. He showed me, I don't wear socks. I don't have to wear socks. So I told him, but you're going to come out for a couple weeks and you'll never leave.
This is amazing. It's amazing the things.
It's great.
He's like, forget about UCLA and the banners and the new practice facility and the arena and all the famous players that are at your press conference. He's like, hey, I don't got to wear socks.
It's great. But then he's over there talking to Michael Warren, was so nice to him, and Jamal Wilkes and all the guys. And I don't think he's processed it yet, to be honest with you. I mean, I can't even imagine, you're sitting there and your son's being named the head coach at UCLA. I mean, imagine that.
I can't. I think, the pride that he must be feeling. I mean, look, there's a lot of pride in coaching at UC and bringing them to prominence and all the games that you've won. But to be the head coach, to be hand selected to be the head coach at UCLA. Mick Cronin, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. I loved what you said at your press conference when you said, "How do I spell fun? WIN." There is this sense that some people have that, hey, the only way to get it done in LA is to play fast and showtime and. It's not that you don't play fast. It's just that you guys play great defense and rebound during your time at Cincinnati. What do you think of, what has your perception been as a guy from Ohio over the challenges in coaching in Southern California stylistically?
Yeah, I've always found that very interesting because, who was the coach of Showtime? Pat Riley. And what was he about? It's very interesting. So I told our team yesterday, I said, guys, I know one thing. You can't run without the ball. So, it's hard. People can practice if you're going to try to run after the other team scores. All they can practice getting back. So, you're a player, you're a coach's son. So, that's a layup question for me, and I appreciate it. This is easy. The easiest way to score is, the first 8-10 seconds of the shot clock. So the only way to do that is to block shots, cause turnovers, force bad shots, so you can take off the other way and get easy baskets. And anybody that's watched us play at Cincinnati, that's what we try to do. But the problem is, when people talk about pace, when you defend and you're hard to score on, it takes teams time to find a shot against you. So it's all really based on how the other team plays, because it's not like you're just going to let them score. I mean, winning teams don't let the other team score. So, hey, we both know this. The more talent you have, if you have better players than your opponent, you want more possessions, right? That's been Roy Williams 101 for years.
Right.
So, and that's the way you should play. So you, and it's interesting because you and I are, again, we're basketball people. I know you got this show and you got to talk about other things, but people in the pros now, they all talk about pace, but you got to be able to win games. Maybe if the other guy's got better players, you can't just win. If you're coaching at Murray State or you're at Cincinnati, you got to win games where the other guy's got better players. I mean, you have to. I mean, if you don't do that, you're not going to win conferences. You're not going to win championships. So, hey, the goal is to have the best players. Then you want the game to have as many possessions as possible because your chances of scoring more than them are going to be exponentially better because you just got more playmakers. So it all depends on your personnel. I mean, at the end of the day, I told the guys, to win a conference, to win a championship, you got to be able to beat the best team on your schedule.
Right.
If you can beat them, everything else falls into place. Well, how do you do that? Well, it may be more possessions. It may be that you better be a great defensive team because you're maybe not the best offensive team. So it depends on our personnel. I mean, but at the end of the day, in basketball, you got to be able to score.
Yep.
I mean, you're not winning anything if you can't score. So
I mean, look at the national championship game. Both those teams are great defensive teams, but both those teams were actually efficient, especially Virginia, in how they scored. Right? Took them a while.
How about the way that both they made shots, man, they made hard shots, which you have to, because both teams are so great defensively. I mean, you're going to have to make some really hard contested shots in that game, and boy, they made free throws as well. So, you know, you got to be good at everything if you're going to be great.
All right, most,
let's be honest. I mean, that's the way it is.
Most important thing, last Ohio guy to come out to Los Angeles, is he's had a bit of a rough year, but he's got all his TV shows, right? LeBron. So is there going to be a barbershop show? Are we going to see, are you coming out to do the Hollywood thing? Like, are we going to see a Netflix show based upon your life? Is that part of the plan?
Right now my life is hang up from you, have lunch here with one of our great boosters, Richard Pacholski. I'm right now, I feel like the Fresh Prince. I came from back east. I'm in Bel Air.
Yeah.
And get back on the phone for the rest. I got to go recruit today. Then I got to get back on the phone the rest of the night. I don't think I have any time for that stuff. But I will. You know, I know Bron. I know, you know, Rich and Mav and those guys from back home. You know, I've known those guys since they were in high school. It's just been unbelievable to watch what they've done. And I'm sure they'll fix it. I'm sure they'll get it right what they're trying to do out here.
All right, the race is on to see who fixes it first, Lakers or the Bruins. Hey, well, welcome to L.A.
Thanks, brother.
People always say, would you prefer a chef or a driver? My advice is driver, right? Driver, then you get
that
a lot.
That was great. That was a good tip.
Yep.
I'm living on campus right now, so I'm walking everywhere.
Well, listen, campus at UCLA, you need a moped. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. Nobody walks. nobody walks in LA. This ain't Cincinnati anymore. Welcome to LA. Thanks so much for joining us. Don't big time us as the rep grows, and we appreciate you joining us.
You got it, man. I'll be a regular. Thanks for having me, Doug, and I'll see you soon.
Okay, definitely. Mick Cronin, head coach of the Bruins, joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Hunter Mahan joins us, who is a tremendous golfer on the PGA Tour in his own right. Joining us from his palatial abode. Is that where you're joining us from?
No, you know, my daughter's doing gymnastics here in Dallas, and so I just stepped out and was watching her, you know, do a little work and having a little fun.
Okay, so you haven't been watching. We are going to have you on. I was like, Pumpy's watched every stroke of every round played so far. You're like, yeah, actually, I've just been watching on Twitter, and I have no idea what's actually going on.
No, I did. No, I watched a little bit, you know, did a little bit of homework for you, Doug. I do anything for you, buddy.
I appreciate that. Hunter Mahan joining us. Okay, so a couple of things we need to know. From those of us who we only watch it through the lens of our television set, we hear about the azaleas. We know about the history. Everything's supposed to be, what is that course actually like to play?
Oof! It is so much fun. The tournament itself is just so much fun for the players, I believe.
Why?
They make it all about the golf. You know, the patrons are not allowed to be rowdy. They're not allowed to, you know, say nice putt or yell at you or, you know. Go with the hole. You know, there's none of that there. You know, you go to the range. The range looks empty compared to any other normal event. You know, you're allowed one person with you besides your caddy, so you can bring your swing instructor. But if you're going to go putt and you've got a putting coach, well, then you have to – your swing coach has to go out, and then your putting guy gets to come back in. So it's just so easy for the golfers, and it's just all about the golf. There's just no kind of anything else going on. You can just completely focus about what you have to do because you have a tough challenge. To figure out the Augusta National Golf Course.
Who does it benefit the most? Like, I've always been told, look, obviously you got undulating greens. It's longer than it used to be, but not crazy long, and it's not really that punishing, right? Like, there's no real rough there. Like, the rough is not nearly U.S. Open rough, and it's not like the British, obviously not like the British Open. Like, so what type of player generally succeeds there?
Precision iron players. You look at Jack and Tiger, both of, you know, they're the top two greatest iron players of all time. Mm-hmm. Mike Weir is one at Augusta because he's a phenomenal iron player. He can just shape it a little bit left and a little to the right. If you can control your ball and can control your distance on each shot, you know, you see the balls, right? You got to hit it 20 feet left because it's going to hit and it's going to roll down to the right. You got to have great distance control, but you got to know where you're landing it and what the ball is going to do after it lands on the green.
Okay, so Tiger got off to a pretty good start. He ends up at 2 under. He did, he was hitting his driver well up until probably the last couple times he used it, which is kind of rare for him. Even in the comeback, right? Like he's still not great with the driver. What are your thoughts on the likelihood we could see Tiger late into Sunday?
I think it's high. I saw him play a few holes today. He looked really comfortable. He just looked very confident in what he was doing and how he was going to play the golf course. Scores aren't really that low because I do think the course is a little wet and it's playing a little bit longer than maybe normal. And guys are, you know, they're struggling a little bit with the ball kind of hitting on the greens. It looks like there are some pretty tough pins out there today. I think he looks like he knows what he's doing. He knows Augusta National very well, and he looks very, very comfortable. And his iron game is great. He doesn't have to drive it great to be in contention on Sunday. I think he just has to putt well more than he has to actually hit his driver well.
Hunter Mahan joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show, giving us some thoughts on the Masters. Adam Scott playing well, 3 under. He's the only guy on tour better looking than you. That's probably the only that's right.
Wow.
Like there's like
Thank
Adam
you.
Scott, then there's Mahan. Then there's maybe DJ, right? Like you guys are the three horsemen of, you know, Ricky's a little smaller fella, but a good looking guy with some swag, but that's really kind of the triumvirate, right?
Smaller fella. That was okay. I'll take it, Doug. Anything from you, buddy, I'm going to take it. I appreciate that.
Okay. So, what about Ricky, right? Like he's the guy with the, I used to think Charles Howell was the guy with the most game who hadn't won big. Now it's Ricky. He won the Players 2 years ago, but he still hasn't broken through at a major. Is this the year that he breaks through?
Well, I think it could be. I think he has the game to win a major. He's been close several times. People have always been concerned about his Sunday. You know, if he's going to finish strong, is he that focused in golf? Is he more concerned in fashion than other things? Ricky is the ultimate competitor. He knows what he's capable of. I think he's been talking it up this year that he does feel like it's his time to win a major and break through and be a top five, number one player in the world. He has all the tools to do that. You know, I think his Sunday finish last year at Augusta kind of showed that. He was right there. He has the game to do it. It's hard to win majors. You know, you only get 4 chances a year, and it's against the best competition in the world, and sometimes the golf course doesn't suit your game, or you have a bad 9 holes, and then your tournament's over. So I love his chances this week, though. I think he's got a ton of confidence. I think he's one of the most confident players in the world right now, and he is playing great golf.
What about Rory?
Yeah, he's got every shot really in the book. I think Augusta is really tailor-made for him. I'm not sure what he finished. Looked like he was struggling a little bit, but, you know, Rory's a guy who went a good 9 holes, you know, buries 3 out of 4 holes, gets a little bit of a momentum, and that can really carry him all the way out throughout the week and get that grand slam.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. You know, there was a couple years ago where guys said, I'm not scared of Tiger anymore. I mean, we're fine. You know, kind of, and many of these guys are playing golf because Tiger made it cool to play golf, right? But I still feel like, and I could be wrong, I still feel like, you can say it, but until you've experienced playing with or in a round in which Tiger is in contention at the majors, you have no idea. Is that accurate? Is it a completely different sport when Tiger's in contention at a major as opposed to the normal pressure of a major?
I think it used to be. I don't think it's as much now as it was. I think you see him playing and interacting with the pros more than he ever has. You know, he's hanging with Ricky Fowler and Dustin and Justin Thomas. These guys they're friends of his now. They play with him a ton at home. Tiger used to have this sort of mystery about him, you know, because he would play with a couple guys. And, you know, they weren't usually the top five players in the world. He used to hang out with Marco Mir and Thomas Bjorn and John Cook. And I think he did it on purpose. I think he wanted to keep his distance a little bit. So on the back nine on Sunday, you know, there was these eruptions and this crowd that no one has ever seen before except him. And so that was unsettling to a lot of guys. But I think now they're used to that more. They're used to Tiger and how he plays and the crowd. So, for you know, it used to be that case, but I don't think so anymore. And I think, honestly, these guys, they look forward to that challenge. You know, before guys were a little, I don't want to say intimidated by Tiger, but yeah. The situation felt big. Now I think they can't wait to play with him, and they can't wait for that opportunity.
I'm going to disagree with you, but you're the professional golfer. I'm the professional talker. We'll see. We'll talk on Monday and figure it out. In the meantime, your daughter's best discipline, is it the floor? Is it the uneven parallel bars? Is it the vault? What does she do best?
The bars. I mean, I think she's strongest at that. I think her, cartwheel needs a little bit of work, but we're working on it. But I think it's getting better. But her upper body strength is getting good. And, you know, she does a little horse riding. So I know you know a lot about that.
I do.
That's, you know, her legs are getting stronger every day. And, it's pretty crazy to see, obviously, children grow up from little babies to what they, you know, you've got 10, 12-year-olds, and, you know, I've got a 6-year-old, so it's a lot of fun, though.
All right. Listen, make sure she gets with the Russians, and so they give her all that they give her all that stuff that makes her so she doesn't grow, and then she can be, you know, a 4'9" gymnast. In the meantime, enjoy the golf, enjoy the time with your family. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, go Lakers.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Let's take a listen to Mark Murphy. He's the president of the Green Bay Packers, addressing the Bleacher Report story and what he believes the effect it could have on the Packers this upcoming season.
I think this is going to be a great motivation for him and the team. You hate to have your dirty laundry,
yeah.
as you said, aired, but I do think it's going to end up being a positive.
Aaron Rodgers discussed the piece in a local radio interview with Milwaukee radio station. And he said, first of all, I stand by everything I said, and I just kind of want to refer to that any other comments go. I said on the show, and I meant it, it's been a great week. I've heard from 100-plus former teammates and coaches and current teammates and coaches, and that's fun, especially some guys you haven't heard from in a while checking in and encouraging you. It's something I'm really trying to put in the past because it's not even to continue to drag on. I think you've heard from all the people who are relevant at this point and actually matter, which are the people who played with him. You know, it's fascinating that everyone's coming out and defending Aaron Rodgers, but I like Mark Murphy's point the best. Mark Murphy did not, that wasn't full denial. Right, Aaron Rodgers saying, I stand by it, which means, you know, none of the story is true. Mark Murphy didn't say it's completely false. He's like, look, some of our laundry gets aired out. It's bad. But you know what? Whatever makes you play better. Whatever makes you play better. And, you know, if you're wondering if a motivated Aaron Rodgers is a good Aaron Rodgers, that's basically what's built his entire career. Aaron Rodgers does not have a chip on his shoulder. That is a massive understatement. He has, and not even one of those personal size bags, like the little kids' bags, a Costco size bag of chips on his shoulder. All right, one chip is no scholarships out of high school. Another chip is no scholarships, one scholarship out of junior college. Next chip is people said, you know, he had a weird throwing motion, he had to fix it. He's product of the system with Jeff Tedford. Another chip is San Francisco 49ers grew up being a fan of them, and they didn't draft the number one overall. Instead, they drafted Alex Smith. Oh, that, and then he had to sit in the green room. More chips. Remember, he was sitting there in the green room, 24th pick. He's waiting. Everybody else is gone. There's Aaron Rodgers and the camera focusing on him. You know, then he goes to Green Bay, and now he's have to sit behind Brett Favre, but Brett Favre wasn't exactly cool to him. It wasn't like, hey, dude, let me show you how all the way things work. Favre was threatened by him. And then Favre was retiring, then not retiring. Happened three times. Then eventually he started. Then his first year, remember, first year, they had a lot of close losses. And he caught the blame, even though it was his defense that was terrible. More chips. More chips. More chips. You know, then he starts winning and playing great. But because of all the success in New England, he's not viewed on the level of Tom Brady. Peyton Manning. Everybody loves Peyton Manning. He's on the TV commercials. Peyton Manning won one Super Bowl in Indy and one Super Bowl in Denver, and he was terrible when he won the Super Bowl in Denver, and he's being called the greatest quarterback of all time. Like, dude, look at what I'm doing with what I'm doing. More chips. More chips. You know, he gets hurt one year. He plays through concussion one year. His offense is lame. His surrounding class is not as good. His coach is not as invested. They fire his quarterback coach as the guy he respects. You know, then there's leaked articles and former teammates and just adding in. And he's just like, dude, let's go. Like Tom Brady over there. You know, Tom Brady, let's go! .26 in completion percentage, but 4,442 yards in a down year on a bum knee. Hurt his knee week 13. Hurt his knee first half of week one. Then did the Willis Reed and came out and beat the Bears. Bears end up with a pretty good defense, didn't they? Pretty good team. It's pretty amazing what he did. How many interceptions did Aaron Rodgers have last year? Two. You know? 17th in yards per attempt. QBR was low, but didn't have a great supporting cast. Now he's got a new offense. If you're going to buy on one guy being in a down year, he threw 25 touchdowns and two interceptions with a stale offense, a coach that was a lame duck on a team that was out of the playoffs with like four games to go. What will he do with more talent and more and re-energized and motivated by an article that he feels like was unfair to him?